chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire, now streaming on Paramount Plus. Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the plague.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You're going to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown. New season streaming June 2nd. Exclusively on Paramount Plus.
New CBS Sunday.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
When something is lost,
everyone's looking for something.
He finds it.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so.
So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker. New Sunday on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome to the Husker 24/7 podcast. I'm Brian Christofferson. I'm joined by Michael Bruntz, fresh off watching some state tournament basketball. Watching a little Carter Nelson over there. We're going to get into that. We're going to get into a few different items. Kind of a grab bag, as Bruntz told me just before he went on the air. I like a good grab bag, so let's roll.
Little hodgepodge, potpourri, whatever
what have you
descriptor you want to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can – We'll go through a few weird topics today. Not weird, but just not, they're not connected in any way. It's we're in that soft underbelly of the off season where spring ball hasn't started yet.
If you want to throw something really weird, like in the middle of it, that's fine with me. Like just some kind of strange conspiracy theory you've always like had under your, you know, tucked under your wing and you want to unveil it to everybody. That'd be fine. Just like right in between some O-line and Carter Nelson talk.
Just shock you with a really hot music take.
Yeah, I know a few of yours. I'm not gonna let a few of your music takes out of the bag that could get you in trouble, just like you have a few things on me. So but anyway, we aren't gonna go there. We're gonna go towards Carter Nelson because you saw him like an hour or two ago, so this is really fresh to you. You've got some hot takes, like, I mean, they're just like burning hot, like scald your mouth right now, but do it anyway.
Yeah, I fresh off of a Class D1 quarterfinal matchup over at Pinnacle Bank Arena. Ainsworth advances with a 62-55 win. I'm not sure what the spread was on that game, but the Bulldogs got it done. Carter Nelson, that was – Schaefer was always the one that went up to Ainsworth and environs nearby to see Carter Nelson play. And that was my first time seeing him outside of state track, I guess. So impressed. I was really impressed. He had 16 points, as you would expect. Possesses a little bit of a different gear that he can go to than most in that class of basketball. But I don't know. It's an interesting conversation. So he... The only reason, and he said the reason, that he did not enroll at Nebraska in January was to have the opportunity to play in the state basketball tournament. He'd grown up going there as a kid, dreamed of being able to play in it himself, and now he's getting to do that. Like I said, 16 points, a couple monster dunks that were impressive, and, you know, looked like the type of athlete that you thought Nebraska was getting. I mean, I don't think there was any surprise there, but I think the conversation around him since basically January, because that was the time of the All-American Bowl, which he participated in, and then the Polynesian Bowl, both showcase events in football, is how soon he can get on the field. And I think there's probably going to be a bit of a learning curve going from 8-man to 11-man football. But am I wrong in that it feels like there should be some way that Nebraska can use that athleticism on the field this coming year? Like, I think we're kind of making this too difficult of a point here. Am I wrong?
No, I'm in complete agreement with you that he can get on the field this season. Now, how many snaps is that per game? I'm not going to guess that. But yeah, like, you can find one or two niche items that I think he could really excel at. I thought in those All-Star games, take them for what they are. But if there was any like, oh, how's he going to stack up to these guys? Well, is he going to be confused that there's 11 men on the field, you know, sort of stuff? It's like, no.
Where's extra yardage coming from?
Yeah. It's like, no, I think he, from what I saw, seemed to appreciate that there were like two or three more guys that he could bang into on a play. You know, he kind of seemed to thrive for the contact and appreciate it. And I thought really showed himself well in the All-Star games that we saw. And also from what we heard, that it's beyond just like the, okay, you saw that game on the Friday night or whatever. The week of practices, from what our people on the scene said, like, he was a guy who stood out on particular days as like one of the better guys at his position group amongst four or five star guys, the same caliber as him. So I totally think this staff is the kind that wants to, in most cases, find ways to get guys on the field sooner than later, where you don't have to know everything. You're going to have to know a few things, but we're going to find ways to accent what you can do well. And so I am thinking he's going to play this year. I don't know how many on that in that class are going to have that opportunity, but Carter Nelson would be on my short list of guys where if you had to predict right now in early March who could burn a red shirt, I'd put him in that. I would guess him. I would guess so. Or maybe he's going to stop at four games or something like that, but at least they're going to get something out of him, I bet.
Yeah, I think, and my reason for saying that too is like, I think sometimes people get hung up on like, okay, is a guy going to play 60 snaps a game or 50 snaps a game at tight end? I mean, sure, you'd love that, right? You know, you sign a top 100 prospect, you would love for him to come in and just be the dude right away. But I think sometimes it can get a little bit overcomplicated with the way that, you know, coaches sometimes operate, where you need a guy to be able to do everything. And I think he strikes me as somebody where, like, you can have 10 to 15 plays a game where you feel like he's got a chance to impact the game. I mean, you're not needing him to go in there and set the edge against Wisconsin and Iowa for 60 plays. Like, take advantage of the athleticism. Matt Rhule's already talked about the positionless football. I mean, we'll see how much they're able to do that. But it just seems like a guy that kind of, as the season goes along, is going to be much more comfortable with what he's doing there. And, I mean, if he would have enrolled in January, I would have said, you know, no doubt in my mind that you know, he gets beyond that four games. We'll see what happens. But I mean, I think he's got a little bit more of a chance than maybe what some of the discourse is out there about what he can do.
Yeah, and also I think there's good case studies from last year that you could kind of apply to what you're talking about. Jalen Lloyd is an example of a player like that to me last year, where he didn't have to play 50 snaps a game to have an impact. We saw what he was a sidebar story in like three different games. And you probably wrote his, I don't remember what his exact snap count for the season was, but I do know it was lesser than other guys at his position.
It was like in the 120s.
It wasn't as near as high as I think some people would suspect it was. But they knew what he was good at. He knew what he was good at that time. And they got the most of it. They maximized that particular space that he could do. And I could see the same thing with Carter Nelson. I think you saw it on the defensive end somewhat with James Williams, although he ended up keeping the red shirt. And maybe that could happen in this case too, with Carter Nelson, where you pick and choose how you want to play him or when to play him. But that's a case where a guy, you know, maybe he'd get 20 snaps a game, but they were going to be a worthwhile 20 snaps that really fit his skill set, and James Williams thrived in it. And yeah, I definitely could see this staff trying to do that with someone like him, who is, I think, kind of a unique talent, which is something you got to be hesitant to say sometimes. But I do think he is really a freak athlete when you've got like Alabama and Georgia wanting to fly into Ainsworth International Airport. I don't think that's the name, but
maybe it would be. Maybe you get like a stray, you get a flight in from Canada or something.
Yeah, that's what I like. Like it's a flight from Tokyo that just randomly comes to Ainsworth.
Where are we? I mean, one last, you kind of hit on it, and you know, just what he showed, I think, in the practices of the two showcase games that he played in, I think is important to note too. I mean, some guys kind of approach those games with a little bit more of like, yeah, you know, I'm in Hawaii, it's a bonus game, a way to cap my high school career. And from what we heard, I mean, he basically showed up ready to work and ready to learn. Like, you know, he was going to take advantage of that opportunity to improve and kind of show what he could do. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that was new to him. I mean, we joke about the number of players on the field and the distance and whatever, but I mean, it is different. And especially from what he was asked to do in high school. I mean, he did everything, but you know, just having a little bit more understanding of the nuances of the tight end position. I mean, I think that was valuable experience for him. So I think attitude wise, you know, he's a confident kid. I mean, somebody asked him after the game today if he had watched the dunk competition that, you know, Nebraska's players had done at halftime of the basketball game. Mm-hmm. And he just kind of casually mentioned that, you know, the dunks that Jeremiah Charles had done, he's done himself. He was complimentary of Charles as an athlete, and it'll probably read a little bit more edgy in print than how it was actually delivered. But he's a confident kid, and I think sometimes that there's certainly going to be humbling moments, I'm sure, but I think a little confidence is never a bad thing.
Man, you should stoke that fire a little bit more. Build up that Jeremiah Charles, Carter Nelson dunk rivalry.
Yeah,
get us a little Wilkins Jordan, like, you know, where it feels like there's bad blood, fake bad blood.
we didn't even talk 80s NBA on the Hoops cast. So
yeah, that was definitely a missed opportunity. The thing I remember about Carter Nelson's performance at the Polynesian Bowl was he had like that 25 to 30 yard catch across the middle, which I think everyone highlighted. But I remember the play where Dylan Rilo was at QB, ran down the line a bit, just kind of, it was a little pass to the sideline to Nelson. Almost looked like a extended option play in a way, and got about 10 yards. And I was like, that was, for whatever reason, that particular play like got the imagination jumping a little bit, like, cause that, it just felt like a, like kind of a, you know, you're out on the sand lot type deal and here you go, get this athlete the ball and let him barrel ahead for 8 to 10 yards. And I thought, man, that could be really something fun, like in the red zone when they're in the same Husker uniform. So I do think there's a lot to like there, and I think we're in agreement. I'm not discounting him from making a difference at some point in 24, even though he's not an early enrollee. And I do like too that he wanted to play in the state tournament. I think that's cool. Like, I think it's neat that Tyson Terry, for obvious reasons, wants to wrestle next year at Omaha North, and that'll take him out of enrolling early, but he's chasing a 4th state title and undefeated mark as a high schooler. I mean, that's a sort of stuff. I know that I just know listening to Rule, they would never stand in the way of guys who want to go after those kind of things in high school and experience that. So that's cool that that's happening.
Yeah. Anything else on Carter Nelson? And I'm going to lead you in a completely different way here. If you're done,
grab the next bag.
All right. So we've been writing here and there about just kind of pre-spring, post open period, signing day, transfer portal movement, and just kind of where things stand. wrote about the offensive line this week, and it's an interesting group. And I want to get a thought kind of popped into my mind as I was kind of going through it. So Bryce Benhart had a good year last year, by all accounts. I think the coaching staff was pleased with the progress he made. He's back. Teddy Prohaska, to this point, is having a healthy offseason, which is that's a big thing for him. He hasn't really had that. Ben Scott's back at the center spot. What level of concern or intrigue do you kind of have going into the spring with what Nebraska's guard position looks like? Because Turner Corcoran is out for the spring. Sounds like that could even bleed into fall camp a little bit. Micah Mazzucca, the transfer from Baylor and then Florida, kind of got called out a little bit, I guess, by Matt Rhule in a press conference. Henry Lutofsky was kind of a rotational player at guard last year. And Justin Evans, I guess the Jenkins is gone, according to the Nebraska roster. Also, kind of stepped in for when they had injuries last year. But what level of concern do you have about the guard spot? Because it seems like there's a lot that's unsettled there as we get ready to start spring ball in a couple weeks here.
I wouldn't say it's concern, but whenever anybody talks about the O-line, you have to at least get to the point that there's a lot of optimism because of the three returners you mentioned. But there's guys who are going to have to take it up a few notches who have, started here and there. Like Justin Evans started maybe four or five games and got some good experience last year. And I think this coaching staff likes him. And the previous staff, I know Ryle has been there the whole time, but like even Scott Frost, I think, like Justin Evans. And so everybody's kind of immediately drawn to, like, he could be just a solid player. But it's a big year for a guy like him and Lutofsky, third, fourth year type guys. You know, that's the point for an O lineman where you sort of have to put your foot in the ground and, like, here you go. Like, I'm a part of this now. The first 2 years, everybody always understands there's a lot of things behind the scenes. What's interesting is if, like, a youngster can insert himself in the mix and jump over somebody. And I'm not saying that's going to happen, but I'm interested in that idea. Like, if there's somebody who has that type of skill level, and I don't know exactly how they're going to line up certain guys. Like, I know Gatula was a tackle a lot last year, but also worked some guard. Sam Sledge is an interior guy where you're kind of wondering if, like, you might start to hear more about him. I'm probably leaving somebody out. I don't know if there's somebody just fresh off of this recent recruiting class who can make that move. That's a lot to ask. But I do think you need Justin Evans to be sturdy. I think you need Henry Lutofsky to start to get the best football out of him. And then Mazzucca's big. Like, he's going to be, I don't want to read too much into that call out that Rhule had. It was obvious that he needed to improve on some things. But the thing I will say is we've seen that before since Rhule got here, and I think are adjusting to it, where, like, Tommy Hill at the beginning of last spring, I don't even think was at the first couple practices, remember? And so we're kind of like, okay, in the old days, that's sort of like, well, that might be over then. You kind of think that's the end of the story. And he had that with a few other guys where some things happen, and he'd say something like, yeah, they got to do better at this. And you'd see them pop up again, and they'd get a chance. So maybe that's what's happening here. It's just trying to light a little fire under Mazzucca, who does have a lot of experience. And so ideally, I'd love to see him meet whatever he's needs to meet and be one of those guys. Hopefully Corcoran's back in August. We don't know for sure what they want to do with him, I guess. We got to figure that out, like, because he's been a tackle as long as they've had him. But I'm with you. Guard is like we're pretty positive about stuff a lot of times around this state, and I think in the media, but guard's got some things to answer.
Yeah. And you mentioned young guys. I mean, you've got, Gibson Pyle is on campus now.
Yeah. He is.
A pretty well thought of high school guard that's, also played in the All-American Bowl, in January. Sledge is a guy, I mean, you go back to last year. I mean, pretty much from the get-go, he was in Nebraska's too deep. I mean, by the time the calendar flipped October, he was there. He didn't play. I don't think he played a single snap last year. But, I mean, the fact that you have a true freshman showing up there, Gatula was the same way at tackle, but that at least is notable to me that he was in there. And I don't know. It's a hard group to kind of really, I think, get a sense of, because you and I were going back and forth a little bit about just trying to wrap your arms around the way that 2023 went for that group. And they showed improvement, but at the same time, I mean, I think the way you phrased it, I think was in line with what I thought too, where it kind of needs to be, last year needs to be like that first step. Like, you need to take that next step in 2024 and kind of have last year be kind of that first stepping stone to improving.
Yeah, last year was nice if that's what it truly was. Otherwise, it was okay. It's hard to go to be too gushing about anything on offense when they had the numbers they did. I mean, I know the quarterback play was suspect and you're working around that. Nonetheless, you know, I always look at it this way. Every week when I'm writing stories, I use a certain statistical site. And, with the defense, it was funny. I'd always scroll right up to the top, you know, like to find, okay, they're ranked eighth this week in this, or they're ranked 13th. And with offense, and this is the way it's been too long with too many stats around here, is you're immediately like scroll bar down, you know, and I mean down, like down to the bottom 115, 130. So, I would say they were okay last year, and I wouldn't say above okay. I understand why Rule and staff is keen on Donovan Raiola. And I think he's had not the easiest assignment as a position coach since he's been here from the first, you know, his first coaching staff he was on, and then adjusting. But I think the respect he has in that room is obvious, and that obviously guys who know the game, who play the game, believe he's good for them. So I think there's a lot to be said for that, but yeah, you want to see them become much more this year, but you also can't take for granted, like, Nuri was a grown dude, 23-year-old dude who was, you know, gave you that. Ethan Piper had played a lot of football, you know, and he's gone. So it matters in this league to have guys who are 21, 22 years old, I think, and have been around. And so they might have to work around that a little bit. Raquan Buckley, maybe, is he on the line? He could be a guard. That'll be like an interesting spring storyline if he like is making a move or is good at it. They obviously see something in him there. So that's one to keep in mind too.
Yeah, that's a good point. And they have no shortage of options, which, I mean, in the past few years, I don't know that you would say that they even had that they could go that deep into things, and which maybe is a sign that things are at least trending well there, that you have young guys that you can at least say, like, okay, maybe this is the next guy, without having to just, like, you know, jump in, have a guy jump in right away and you know, if he's not ready.
Yeah. Machachak's on the D-line, right? So, or he's listed on the D-line right now.
I thought he was on offense now.
I just did a quick search and they still have him on D-line on the bio I'm looking at, but I don't know. So there's some of those guys though that, I mean, you could bring him up as an example, you know, your Mason Goldman types who, you know, maybe this spring you're kind of figuring it out still with certain guys, like exactly where they're best at. And so if our iffiness on that one is, if you're calling us into question, I think we're through it, bringing a good point about how some things can be up in the air with certain guys.
Yeah, no. And that's, I mean, with the staff too, there's never a fear of moving a guy if he can help somewhere else, which is a good thing. I mean, I think they've got options on both sides of the ball that are probably pretty unsettled. So anything else offensive line that you're dying to talk about?
I think that's probably enough for that for first week of March, but We did it, and we that makes us Nebraskans, you know, talking some O-line on March 7th or whatever.
Yeah, just it's the time to do it. It's always time for O-line talk in Nebraska. We'll take a quick break.
Yeah, let's take a break. Let me get some water.
Yeah, all right.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Dan Orlovsky, are you still a Jaden Daniels is the best quarterback available in the draft guy?
I think the three things that make it stand out for me are, number one, I think his ball placement versus man coverage is the best in the draft. Every quarterback in the NFL is accurate. He's got the best on tape. Number two, most transferable stuff to the NFL. And then I think the third thing is pocket peace.
Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
You ready, Bob?
Well, all right.
Audiences are raving. Bob Marley is electrifying. It's the feel-good movie of the year.
You dig?
Bob Marley, One Love. Rated PG-13. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
And we're back. Do we want to wipe out football here before we hit baseball, or what do you want to do?
Let's go baseball and finish with the talk about the early part of the schedule, because I did some snapshot.
as one does in March, you look ahead to the schedule in September.
Yeah.
Quick, Nebraska baseball. They're finally home, 7-3, and things are looking good. You got you only got three games in of the four against College of Charleston, but that's okay. You swept there. You won all three games in very dramatic fashion in the ninth inning. And Nebraska comes in with its best 10-game start since the 2008 season, believe it or not. And they will host South Alabama for three games this weekend, as is per custom. Maybe some real field temperature issues this weekend, potential rain and some cold temperatures, which I think is usually par for the course. But have to be feeling pretty good about the way that things have started for this team.
Yeah, I thought it was impressive this past weekend how, you know, they came back. They showed some resolve, you know, in multiple games where, you know, maybe in a year or two past, you would have thought like, okay, they're going to have trouble digging out of that. But I guess you're the expert on it, but I felt like the bullpen did pretty well to like kind of keep their opponents where they were for the most part, give them a chance to rally, and then, you know, do enough late to get those critical outs. And they got it from different arms, it seemed like.
Yeah, I think we've mentioned this, but I think they feel like the bullpen's kind of the strength of the team. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've got guys in the bullpen that they haven't even thrown yet that in most years would be, you know, pretty regular contributors. So, you know, they've gotten, you know, Tucker Timmerman as a true freshman coming in and throwing pretty well. Kyle Perry as a sixth-year senior closing out a game on Sunday. Just kind of up and down the line of guys that have experience that have pitched well so far this season. And they've done enough offensively. I mean, it hasn't been exciting offense. It hasn't, you know, looked at kind of the way last year did with Anderson and Matthews in there. But they're getting the job done. They're putting pressure on teams. And, I mean, you saw it in the, I guess it was Sunday, you get a leadoff double, a sack bunt that gets thrown into right field, and that's you know, how you score the go-ahead run. So I think that you can kind of start to see this team coming together the way that they had kind of envisioned it happening. They used, I think, 15 or 16 position players in one of their wins this past weekend. So they were really kind of digging into that depth, and also just the pitching staff again. I mean, you got good starts from Drew Christo, a good start from Brett Sears, and, you know, they're going to go with Tyner Horn on Sunday this week against South Alabama, the true freshman. And I think that might be a pretty good 1-2-3 option on the weekends. So Nebraska, very briefly, you had to make sure to get on Warren Nolan while it was there, but they were number one in the country RPI wise. Obviously, this early in the season, there's a lot of fluctuation there as games get played around the country, but currently sitting number six in the country RPI wise. So you always talk about early in the year, you have to schedule tough games. You have to win those games on the road. And Nebraska, if they can keep this rolling, has set themselves up really well for being in the NCAA tournament conversation. It's probably way too early to even have that talk now, but kind of that first checkbox that you have to do as a Northern team, they've done.
We should have done a whole podcast on the top six and that RPI and like broke it down.
You want them? Yeah, Arkansas, UCF.
UCF, huh? Have they been good at baseball? They should be.
They've been okay, I think.
Yeah, they should be.
I think maybe UC Irvine's in there.
Mm-hmm.
Which you would kind of expect. Clemson, Notre Dame, another one that's in there, 9-2. So
Notre Dame and Nebraska are really the only Rust Belt teams there.
But yeah, Nebraska right now has the 10th strongest strength of schedule in the country. Yeah. So that's a good place to start.
I don't think some people, we mentioned this the last podcast, the general public like me on this one didn't realize like how tough the schedule was, maybe because you see Grand Canyon and you see College of Charleston and you're just like, oh, well, you don't equate it necessarily. But no, I mean, College of Charleston was undefeated.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and it's the way they factor it. I mean, it's your opponents that you play. It's your opponent's opponents. It's where it happens. So if you can get early road wins in the season, I mean, you really do kind of set yourself up pretty well. I mean, Nebraska's already got six road wins as they sit here coming home. So that's a good little feather in your cap to have. And I think they've done a good job of scheduling teams that are going to be towards the top half of their conference, that are going to play good teams. I mean, I don't think we need to get too deep in the weeds about scheduling, but they flipped out some of the Summit League teams that they've scheduled in the past for midweeks for schools like Kansas, Wichita State. And those, if you win those, I mean, those help you even more because, I mean, Kansas is going to play nothing but quad one games the entire season being in the league they're in. So there's a ton of benefit to doing that.
Yeah, that's true. Also, I felt like maybe other people can relate to this with their teams, like their pro teams. Sometimes your team will lose a game where it kind of stings you. Like Nebraska lost that one early to Oklahoma, right? Where's a ninth inning rally by the Sooners. And so it's kind of sticking in your craw. And then, but then it comes around, you know, it's the law of averages. You hope evens out at some point, which hasn't for Nebraska football for a while, which is why people are very frustrated. But they had these wins this past weekend, which made me think like, okay, that kind of erases the Oklahoma thing a little bit, you know, and then, you know, they kind of got back where they won a couple where you could have said that could have went the other way too.
Yeah, no, they felt like they played better baseball that first weekend than what the results showed. And I think that kind of they were able to back that up against Grand Canyon and College of Charleston. So we'll see what they can do at home. But 10 of the next 12, I believe, are in Lincoln. So time to stack a few wins.
Is it supposed to get what's the weather like? You said it's rough, but is it supposed to – Sunday's okay.
Yeah, Sunday be all right. It's Friday might be a little chilly. You might have to at least keep an eye on that temperature at first pitch.
Friday looks rough. My phone shows the wind symbol. I hate the wind symbol like more than about anything in the world.
Yeah. Well, you don't know what the context, like it's Nebraska. It's always windy. Like, what's windy?
You shouldn't feel that like down on wind like I do, but man, the older I get, it really grinds my gears, Bruns.
It does. It's a good segment.
Anyway,
you want to talk your September schedule briefly here?
Yeah, we can talk about it. I mean, I just did it. We have to put things up sometimes. And I did a snapshot on, I'm going through right now. Like, okay, these are some of the bullet points of remember what this team did last year. Some people wouldn't know like what Northern Iowa did last season or UTEP, and that they have a new coach. But for instance, UTEP does, name Scotty Waldwin, which I believe you correctly said sounds like a country singer or yeah. like a winner of like American Idol season 4.
Yeah. Or like a guy that's just bumping around on like the buy.com tour.
Yeah. Scotty Walden. He like finished third this week.
he's trying to earn that tour card.
So I learned about UTEP. They got some work to do on their run defense. They did not have a good year. That's why they have a new coach that, I mean, they won like 3 games last season. Scotty Walden was pretty good at Austin Peay before that. So he's trying to, change that program around. But it's probably a better opener without taking anything for granted than Nebraska's had in the past, where you're like on the road in a conference game the first week. So there's that one. And then there's Colorado. Colorado's interesting this offseason in that I think a couple of coaching hires kind of stick out. They brought in Robert Livingston, who was with the Bengals. I think he was Zach Taylor's like secondary coach. And Deion Sanders like pinpointed him to be the DC there. And so he's taking over that job for a defense that really struggled last season. And then Phil Loholt, familiar name to football fans, is the O-line coach. Doesn't have like a huge resume, but he's taking over a big job for a group that was like second to last in the country in sacks allowed. So that was kind of jumped out to me about Colorado and their offseason transactions. Northern Iowa is the third game, Bruns. They were 6-5 last year, which I wasn't sure what they were until I looked it up. And they have a veteran staff with Mark Farley. He's been there a long time. So they didn't have the most inspiring season last year. So they're trying to kind of come back from that. But then at the end of September, and we could maybe spend just a minute on these guys. You got Illinois to start Big Ten play in Lincoln, right? And then at Purdue. And Purdue's got a quirky – they got a tough schedule before – you'll know a little bit about them before they come to Lincoln. They play that game against Notre Dame. They sometimes play. And then they play at Oregon State, which is an interesting one.
They weren't good last year.
They weren't – they did win 2 of their last 3, and I felt like Ryan Walters kind of was getting maybe building it a little bit more like he wanted to, but that it's a big if about him still. I mean, it was his first year as a head coach. He's obviously had a ton of success as a DC, but Purdue's been like the cradle of quarterbacks and stuff like that. They've had all these guys who have come through and played that position so well, and so it's interesting to me, like the new look Purdue, how that era transpires with a guy in Walters who's more of a defensive minded coach. It's sort of different than they've always had. You always think of like Brohm and Tiller and these coaches, you know, who they put up a lot of points. And they weren't the most defensive minded teams. So that's going to be interesting to watch. I noted in my story about Illinois, when Nebraska won there last year, 20-7, on that Friday night game, I don't know if you felt this way, Bruns, but it was sort of like people were happy that the Huskers won. But remember, the offense just kept turning it over in the red zone like every time in the second half, it felt like.
Yeah.
And it sort of like dampened the mood a little bit about the whole thing, even though the Blackshirts played a great game. And everybody kind of thought Illinois stunk at the time, like really stunk, because they were like 2-4 and it looked like, oh, they're going to win like 3 games. They actually finished a lot better and ended up 5-7 and probably should have got in a bowl.
Which of those 5 games, like, do you feel most like concerned about? I mean, you got to go to Purdue, obviously, so that's a little bit of a different animal, but am I wrong that Colorado, like you kind of don't know what you're going to get because they reset the deck so much coaching wise, and they're doing another year of the transfer portal Rama stuff. like that game, it feels like there's a lot of unknowns. Oh, by the way, you're also adding in the fact that I think that game has a lot of potential to be like Miami 2014.
Oh, it's going to be intense. I really hope it's at night.
Yeah.
I mean, regardless, but let's not put that thing at 11 a.m. It'll probably be there on like Fox, you know, but that game belongs under the lights with just where like Nebraska Nice is like completely out the window.
Yeah. Well, with everything that happened at the midfield stuff last year, like it there's just so much extra.
Oh man.
I don't think it'll be, maybe the players feel that. I don't know, but you got to feel like going into that game last year, everybody was already kind of frothing at the mouth anyways. And then with the way that things kind of played out with the sideshow stuff, I don't think that will, you know, tamp down anything for this coming season.
No, and you know what? There's extra sidebars to this college season with like things like the EA Sports game and all this stuff. Like you'll see these headlines and maybe it'll just be a reality. Like who's the highest rated player? And it's like Travis Hunter should be the highest rated player, you know, and things like that. I was thinking about that the other day. That's kind of going to be a little fascinating piece to this where guys have like, oh, you're the, you know, like it goes beyond like, oh, you were a 4-star like 3 years ago. It's more like, oh, you're rated 97 or whatever on the game. We'll see. I just think there's a lot of extra juice with that comes with some of these things. But yeah, I think I'm not here to take a lot of shots at Colorado and what happened in year one. I know there was some glee in parts of the country and around here that they fell off and they blew that game to Stanford, and then it was like they couldn't win again and they finished 5-4-8. But when you look at their games, a lot of close losses. Close losses despite having an O-line that was atrocious at, you know, like with no run presence, and maybe that's just going to be a problem ongoing. But if they get that corrected even a little bit, I do have a lot of respect for what Shedeur Sanders can do as a player. And I think he can be dangerous. On the defensive side, they're going to have to make a big jump, you know, with their new DC. They're going to have to be just much more stout. They played well against Nebraska. Nebraska just dropped the ball literally for them in that game. But there were other games where they were kind of where it was a struggle there. And you felt like that, you know, if they're going to be the kind of team Deion Sanders wants to be, they're going to have to rise up, sort of like Nebraska's offense is going to have to rise up statistically.
Yeah, that'll be, I'm with you. Like, I hope that game is not at 11 a.m. Like it's that needs to be in prime time if at all possible.
The only other thing real quick, I think Illinois, like right away, you know, in Lincoln, Belima's got his coordinators back from last. He's sticking with his guys. He did switch out a couple assistant coaches. You know, they're going to miss their Jerzon Newton, who was a freak, you know, on the D line. But I think he's always going to have a team as long as he's there, where maybe they are a 5 or 6 win team, but they're one of those 5 or 6 win teams that like they could play you to a 20-16 game on any given Saturday. So the Colorado one will be huge for setting the tone. Okay, everybody's feeling great if you win it, but you got to then keep following that up like in Illinois, because there are a lot of people I know on our board. I put it out there. How many of those 5 games are going to win? And there's a lot of 5-0s and stuff like that. But you know, Nebraska is going to have to take care of the details that we're missing sometimes, or one or two of those games could easily slip.
Yeah. So they'll be, those are the first, to come home and you got Rutgers that for potential bowl eligibility, if you start 5-0. So we'll see how that goes.
There you go. So, that's, some September scheduled talk in early March. Go with our O-line talk in early March.
Just what you wanted, what everybody wants. Eh.
Got to talk about something.
Yeah.
There we go. Well, we're going to have lots to talk about. Should I finish it up, Bruns?
Please do.
Can I finish it?
Get us to the finish line.
We'll have plenty to talk about, actually, because spring ball is around the corner. It's on March 24th. There's Pro Day coming up on March 20th. And no Huskers are in the combine, so they got to show out there. So we'll have the, you know, stuff from that. Obviously, recruiting's ongoing. A lot of spring visitors coming up. We keep having updates on our site about this guy's coming on this state, and so we're going to continue to do that. And of course, baseball is playing good ball. 7-3, best start since 2008, as Brunts told us. Husker hoops, chasing the dance, and you know, a possible double bye, and we're going to keep like tracking the seedings and all that stuff. So everything you could want is at Husker 24/7. Come to our site for all the latest. Thank you.